This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. Delta County Commissioners joined other counties around the state and the West as they affirmed their allegiance to the Second Amendment yesterday. KVNF's Marty Derlin was there as Sheriff Fred McKee read the proclamation.
Therefore, be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Delta County, Colorado, in full cooperation and coordination with the Delta County Sheriff, will preserve and defend the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. Duly adopted this first day of April 2013 by the Board of County Commissioners of Delta County, Colorado.
As current president of the County Sheriffs of Colorado, McKee has been front and center in defense of the Second Amendment and against gun regulation. Sheriff McKee.
I don't know how required this document is, but I think it will certainly please the vast majority of our constituents out there, yours and mine, to see that we truly recognize the importance of guarding against infringement of the Second Amendment rights.
The commissioners unanimously stood firm for the right to keep and bear arms. But I asked Commissioner Doug Atchley what the proclamation will mean in a practical way.
Does this mean then that any gun regulations that are passed by our legislature won't be honored by this county?
It doesn't mean anything yet until we cross that bridge. We're all bound by state, national law, and state of Colorado law and Oklahoma County law, so this debate is going to be ongoing. It's not over yet.
Guess I'm just asking what this might mean on the ground.
Just exactly what it says.
That was Commissioner Bruce Hovde chiming in. So there you have it. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
Yesterday, the state Senate held a lengthy debate on a complicated plan to change how Colorado funds its K through 12 schools. The Democratic proposal initially passed the Senate on a party-line vote. Bente Berkland has more from the state capitol.
School funding reform has been the subject of intense discussions, especially for the bill's sponsor, Democratic Senator Michael Johnston of Denver. He's worked on the issue for nearly 2 years, talking to several thousand people across the state.
We tried to build, over that time, a sense of what are the most important needs, what are the things that we've cut, what are the real bars to adequacy and equity.
In addition to funding the basics, Johnston's bill aims to give school districts more money for English learners, full-day kindergarten, and at-risk students, among other things. It would also require districts to report school-level costs, such as teachers' salaries.
And so the key is not just what's the sticker for how many dollars you put into education. The key is what is the amount of dollars that generate the outcomes that you want.
Outcomes are one thing, but the bill's reforms wouldn't go into effect unless voters pass a $1 billion tax increase this fall. Republicans like Senator Scott Renfro of Greeley say a tax increase won't improve learning.
This is a bill of special interest groups that have put together a package of what they want to do to get a $1 billion tax increase. This bill does not require any difference in academic achievement.
Republican Senator Mark Scheffel of Parker agrees with parts of the bill, but thinks it falls short.
The reform is really not all that much reform. This is an area that really needs complete overhaul.
Scheffel also wishes the measure wasn't tied to a tax increase.
It seems fairly arbitrary. Why is $1 billion the magic number? I don't understand how that's been arrived at, and especially since we're, you know, getting ready to get a Supreme Court opinion at some point.
The Colorado Supreme Court is expected to rule later this year on a lawsuit that says the state's education system is unconstitutional. Parents in several school districts sued the state, saying schools don't have the resources to pay for the education system Colorado's created over time. Even Senator Michael Johnston admits $1 billion may not be enough.
And there are estimates out there that range, you know, in some cost studies from a little over $1 billion to some up to $4.7 billion. So even amongst that community of advocacy, there is not yet agreement on what that right number is.
But Johnston says he wanted to err on the conservative side when going before voters with a tax increase. Democratic Senator Linda Newell of Littleton says if it's going to happen, tax increase should occur sooner rather than later.
I don't want to continue to see education so poorly funded. in Colorado, and this is one way to get there that is more equal but fair.
The education community's reaction to the school finance plan has been mixed, and school districts with higher numbers of low-income students, such as Denver and Aurora, would make out better than suburban and small districts. The measure has been changed to remove some of the most controversial provisions. Advocates say it will be a landmark overhaul, but lawmakers still complained about the bill's complexity. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that low snowpack in the upper Colorado River Basin has brought into play one of the key elements of an agreement covering the management of the Colorado River. Chris Treese, spokesman for the Colorado River Water Conservation District, said the Shoshone Generating Station in Glenwood Canyon is calling water down from the high country as if the station were operating at full tilt. But the station will draw only 750 cubic feet per second of water from the river, enough to spin only one of its two turbines. Treese said that allows upstream users to set aside water they would otherwise have to let flow by to allow for electricity generation in the second Shoshone turbine. The Shoshone Relaxation Agreement is part of an overall pact between Denver Water and several Western Slope water agencies and governments outlining the management of the river from its headwaters in the Never Summer Range to the Utah state line. Relatively cool temperatures at the end of March appear to have left the state's water supply in slightly better shape than in 2012, when hot, dry winds swept away much of the moisture in the high peaks. Treese said runoff is not yet coming down. A slower melt will provide a greater opportunity to store water in reservoirs, which still aren't expected to fill this spring. Upstream water users have a limited time to take advantage of the Shoshone Relaxation Agreement. It lasts only through May 20th. Irrigators in the Gunnison River Basin are also moving to take advantage of what water they can. Steve Fletcher, general manager of the Uncompahgre Valley Water Users Association, says irrigators are aggregating their water, making the most of some pre-irrigation practices for their corn crops, and taking other measures. Many customers have been notified that they will get only 50% of the water they usually receive. So far, Fletcher says, 2013 looks like early 2003, which also followed a drought year. When the Bureau of Land Management proposed leasing 30,000 acres for gas development in the North Fork Valley, winemaker Brent Hellickson felt the threat to his winery as well as other agriculture and tourism-based businesses. The lease parcels have been deferred for now, but Hellickson, who has been building his family business on Garvin Mesa for 20 years, is still working with others to protect the valley from destructive gas development. Here's KVNF's Marty Durlin with more.
Last summer, Brent Hellickson joined a stakeholders group that has met regularly to create a North Fork alternative plan designed to protect what local residents hold dear. The alternative is in response to the BLM's soon-to-be-released resource management plan, the document that will govern energy development on public land here for the foreseeable future. Hellickson talked recently about what he felt when the BLM first proposed to sell gas leases in the North Fork.
Well, initially it was just surprise that it didn't seem to make very much sense. There was no traditional gas geological structure here that would suggest there was a natural gas deposit to be exploited. However, the advances in fracking technology made other shale kinds of deposits that historically weren't economically viable now seem to be more economically viable. So initially it was a surprise, and then as we began to move into the process a little bit dismay, because the process, at least from our point of view, seemed to be heavily weighted towards development at really any cost, and not weighted very heavily towards those who might want to be careful about how that was done.
Because there's precedent for the BLM to take seriously the concerns of residents who will be directly affected by their decisions, the stakeholders group tried to closely define what should be protected from a variety of perspectives.
What we attempted to do was to get a group of representatives in the room that represented various interests in the valley, and then with that group identify the characteristics of the public lands in the area that we depended on for our livelihoods. And there were characteristics such as the views, the underground water, the purity of the water, for example, for the Pena water system. They were the viability of the surface water and the watersheds, which we all depend on for irrigation. The bucolic lifestyle, the low traffic, low noise, low dust, low pollution, low light pollution. All those kinds of things are values that the public lands bring to the valley that are depended on by the people who live here. And not all of those are always accurately accounted for in the BLM process.
Yes, some of them can't be really quantified.
It's difficult. You know, is it appropriate to try to put a dollar value on a dark sky at night? To try to put a number on that sort of flies in the face of what many people in the valley are here for.
Hellickson makes clear the group has no quarrel with coal mining in the valley, which has been here for more than a century and is well regulated.
Coal mines strive to meet those regulations and live up to their community responsibilities. And the natural gas people may also do that, but they are far less well regulated, and there isn't the history that there is in the valley with the coal mine.
When the BLM releases its own plan this spring, the agency will put forward a selection of scenarios, designating one as preferred. In the same way, the stakeholders group has created a preferred scenario, and Hellickson wants other residents of the North Fork to weigh in on the alternative plan so that it can represent as many people as possible.
My hope is that we will have captured much of what most of the people in the valley value. It will be impossible to get complete consensus on it, and I recognize that. However, if there are things that we have missed or things that we have overstated or things that we have understated, I would ask that people who have those concerns raise them and raise them quickly, so that we get something that is truly representative of what the people who are living in the valley would like to see. Specifically, we're concerned about getting protections for things that we value so that as we move forward, we don't inadvertently allow some kind of development to occur that destroys something that we value that is difficult to replace or recover from.
You can find the plan at citizensforahealthycommunity.org or theconservationcenter.org. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
As of April 1st, yesterday, Delta County's Adobe Buttes landfill will no longer accept tires for free. Commissioners approved a $2 per tire charge yesterday, and if there are more than 10 tires, the load is considered bulk, and the charge is $140 per ton. Last month, the landfill accepted about 4,000 tires for free. Earlier this year, the county shredded more than 700 tons of tires, accumulated over time because of the free policy. It takes approximately 70 tires to make a ton. Evelyn Horn reports 460 sandhill cranes at Hart's Basin yesterday evening and 3 pelicans. Total cranes to date, 11,473. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.